Welcome back to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. We have an awesome show for you this week. We're going to talk about the Chicago Auto Show, as well as some of the things we've been driving. Plus, we will spend your money. So with that, I will bring in two of the guys who went to the Windy City. It's quite windy right now in Michigan, by the way. That's Road Test Editor Zach Palmer and News Editor Joel Stocksdale. What's going on, gentlemen?
Oh, good. Just coming off that Chicago pizza high or casserole. I feel like we had this discussion last year that the Chicago Auto Show happened too. We all have some pretty varied opinions on what the best pizza is. So
let's be real. That's all anybody really cares about is what pizza we like. You know, they can get exactly all the car stuff from the website. How are you doing, Joel?
Doing all right. Trying not to be blown away because, like you said, it is really, really windy out. I can hear it howling outside.
It's crazy. It is like, sometimes when we talk about the weather at the start of these podcasts, and I've noticed most podcasts open with a weather commentary. I don't know. But we got some real weather today. The winds are very high. It's crazy. I just picked my trash cans up like literally halfway down the block. It was crazy. I was like, literally there's a neighbor I don't even know. And I had to go get my recycling bin over there. So good times here in the windy state. But let's jump into the Chicago Auto Show breakdown. I thought it was a pretty good show this year all around. You know, there was a fair amount of reveals, let's put it that way. Maybe not like what we may have seen in the past, but you know, it was solid. Let me put it that way. We did our editor's picks. We did a little bit different this year because, you know, it was a little more of a little bit of a toned down show, but just initial impressions. What did you guys think?
Well, it sure feels like it's kind of back up to just about full strength, like pre-pandemic kind of size. Like it's in both of the main hallways at McCormick Place. And it was mostly filled up. Like most of the manufacturers that we've expected to be there were there and had like full scale displays. It was feeling pretty normal. It was nice.
Cool.
Yeah, no, there were certainly a lot of manufacturers there. Not a ton of press conferences, but I feel like they still filled up a day full of press conferences. The second day was pretty light. And you know, honestly, I mean, we've known Chicago as like being that truck show, but there weren't a lot of trucks revealed this year. In fact, like the only truck news that came out of it was Ram revealing the name of their electric pickup truck, the Rev. But beyond that, it was just like a bunch of SUVs, crossovers, and then a weird little Mustang wheel thing. So maybe it's a crossover and SUV show, not a truck thing.
Well, isn't that really what every show is these days, is a crossover and SUV show, and then maybe you get like one hot car or something?
Yeah, honestly, that it's been the case for a while, but it worked this year. I feel like a bunch of SUVs and crossovers were just fine, and I don't need it to be 100% truck show. That's the way it's going to be going forward.
So I'm going to run through the winners, our editor's picks, such as they are from the show. And that's actually a pretty good encapsulation of everything that was there. You know, in the past, we would do extensive voting and we'd pick the top five and there would be like 15 things or 20 things that you could vote on. This year, there was about five things you could vote on. So it was essentially more of like ranking the reveals, but that's fine. So I'll run through them and then let's just kind of, you know, you guys can riff like, do you agree with them? Do you not agree with them? What did you like? Et cetera, et cetera. So without further ado, and these have been on the website for close to 48 hours. By the time you listen to this, it'll probably be more like close to 100 hours. So, but in fifth place was the Ford Mustang Dark Horse. Wasn't exactly the car. Essentially, some of us, myself included, gave it points for revealing the new interior and the carbon fiber wheels, which got it enough points to be in fifth place. And I actually kind of fully agree with that. So that was our fifth place one. Number four was the 2024 refreshed VW Atlas and the Atlas Cross Sport. I always liked the Atlas a little bit more than I think most people have. So I also gave it some points right in that area. Number three, the Wrangler Rubicon 4xe and 392. This is the 20th anniversary editions, which people like Jeeps, people like Wranglers. And then we get more into the meat and potatoes. This is the 2024 Subaru Crosstrek in second place. Essentially, this was the U.S. reveal of the U.S. spec car. And then number one was a legitimate like new car reveal. We have not seen this before. I'm almost tripping over my words because it's like a real reveal that you would count at an auto show as opposed to like a North American reveal or something. But of course, this is the Toyota Grand Highlander, which I think received almost universal approval as the number one reveal. So what stood out to you guys? We have five sort of main things to work with. Can also talk about the Ram Rev being revealed, maybe get to that in a little bit. But I mean, what did you guys like just being on the ground? What was cool? Which of these, you know, kind of stayed with you?
Yeah. I mean, sort of starting from the top of the editor's picks there with the Mustang wheels, that was like a really neat surprise. Like I just sort of walked up to the Ford booth there and saw the Dark Horse sitting on this stand. I'm like, I think it has carbon fiber wheels on it. Ford hadn't really sent anything. It didn't send out any press release or do any press conference or anything. It was just kind of sitting there like, hey, maybe you guys will notice this. Maybe you won't. No, they're super, super cool wheels. This is like the first time that you can actually get carbon fiber wheels on a Mustang that isn't a Shelby. It was only on the 350R and 500 last gen. Now you can just get it on the GT Dark Horse. So I thought that was super cool, honestly. And that was probably like the one surprise of the show that I was sort of just sitting there like delightfully surprised. Oh, cool. Carbon fiber wheels. These will be expensive, but they're super neat.
I thought that and the Wrangler both were like, as far as like going to the toy bin, those were the fun ones, you know. But go ahead, Joel.
I mean, it's bizarre that Ford didn't put out like a press release on it, because it's like they sent us a press release on showing off the interior.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so you thought like the color scheme on the seats and the Dark Horse was important, but not having carbon fiber wheels on it? Like what's the deal, guys? And I mean, I guess I wasn't like that blown away by kind of Mustang parts and features, but there wasn't a whole lot that I was super blown away by at this show. Grand Highlander, I think, was actually the most impressive for me, just because, I mean, when they first announced that they were going to show Grand Highlander, I was like, oh, okay, it's going to be a Highlander, but long. And they bring it out, and it's actually pretty much its own thing. Like, it doesn't even look all that much like a Highlander. And it's also getting the hybrid max powertrain from Toyota Crown and Lexus RX, which, while I wasn't super impressed by the Crown, the powertrain is really nice. And so I think, like, for people that are looking for kind of a premium family hauler, I think the Grand Highlander could be really nice.
I was impressed with the style too. Like, it does look legitimately different from the quote unquote regular Highlander, and the powertrain was interesting to me as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, for being the one big reveal there, I feel like it was a pretty big one. I was just looking at the number of comments on all the stories, and Grand Highlander seems to have attracted a lot of attention, probably because it is a big Toyota SUV and everybody's always interested in big Toyota trucks, SUVs. I don't know if you saw the one that was on the show floor there, Joel, but they had one decked out in this Nintendo Switch, like livery and games. And like, you could play games in the back of this thing. There were a bunch of people around it when I went by, so I never actually got to play games, but I was just curious if you got to take a look at that. It had like this crazy red interior. So there were actually two Grand Highlanders there. I mean, that was the one that was in addition to the actual show car.
Yeah, I knew that was there. They had said that, I think, like the first 500 or so Grand Highlander purchases will get a free Nintendo Switch OLED model, which is kind of neat. I don't know that throwing in a free Switch is going to make me rush out and buy a Grand Highlander.
Yeah, let me go buy a Grand Highlander so I get a free $300 Switch.
Yeah, and also I don't know, I guess I feel like a whole lot of people that might be in the market for a Grand Highlander probably already have a Switch, so I'm not entirely sure how that's such a huge selling point, but whatever. It's whatever. Mm-hmm. And on kind of the subject of whatever, actually maybe worse than whatever, the Volkswagen Atlas reveal, which I think they look nice, but I also think that the Atlas in general has just kind of looked nice, but I'm just so confused as to what's going on at Volkswagen, because this kind of mid-size to large crossover segment is one of the biggest and most competitive in the market right now. And what Volkswagen has chosen to do with it is to do another refresh on a pair of SUVs that are already getting pretty old. And in addition to that refresh, dropped one of their powertrains, and in refreshing the interior, gave it Volkswagen's pretty much universally derided infotainment system and touch controls. And I'm just kind of baffled, because all of that just seems like a bad move, especially when in the same convention hall, Toyota has just revealed a bigger and probably more competitive SUV that Volkswagen is going to have to deal with. And even Mazda, while not at the show, just in the past couple of weeks, has launched a whole new three-row SUV that Volkswagen will be dealing with. That sounds like it's going to be a much more impressive package. It's like, what are you doing, Volkswagen?
Yeah, you know, if you ask Volkswagen, they would probably have the the opposite opinion on their Atlas here. But you know, I'm not totally against you there, Joel. The interior, I mean, I honestly thought that the Atlas had one of the worst interiors as far as like the three rows go. Like, it just felt so cheap. I remember sitting in it like back in 2016 when they launched it, and it was like, wow, like this is your brand new three row SUV that's meant to compete against the Explorer, Pilot, all that. It feels like it's, I don't know, made with Legos, just really, really cheap feeling. And you know, so this redesign certainly makes it feel less cheap. I mean, they throw a lot of like faux stitching and leather stuff on the dash, and just use nicer materials all around. But then, like you said, they go and toss the infotainment system in it that has just been universally derided by pretty much every media or press that has touched it. And I wonder, you know, I mean, obviously they weren't expecting everybody to hate this infotainment system when they launched it, but now they kind of have this product roadmap where they're just throwing it into every single car out there. And I went and tried it out at the auto show there. They said that they made some software updates to it. And honestly, it still has the same problems of, you know, the weird touch capacitive volume and climate controls that don't light up in the dark. Like, you literally can't control it when it's dark outside. And the touchscreen was still fairly laggy and not great to use on this show car. Maybe it'll be better by the time it gets to production, but yeah, it is a little disappointing to say the least.
Yeah, and you mentioned Pilot, like that's another one that has just mm-hmm. been completely redesigned. It's like, this is a seriously tough market, and Volkswagen is coming at it with a really, really old product that now probably has an actually worse infotainment than it used to. I'm just kind of shocked.
Yeah, it's, to me, the Atlas has been a tricky one. I went on a prototype drive back in 2016, and it kind of resonated with me. I was like, well, this is a little bit different. You know, it's a Volkswagen-y take on a Ford Explorer. And they were ambitious. You know, they have a plant in Chattanooga. They went for it. You know, they really did. But, you know, based on what I've been seeing and what you guys are saying, it kind of feels like, wow, another nice for trying, guys, sort of approach. Like, you know, if you're going to unseat somebody in the segment, you really got to like bring it in all areas. And outside of, like, again, I happen to like the styling of it. Outside of that, you know, you're kind of like, well, I mean, unless you get a good deal on one, you know, there's probably better options out there for you. Not probably, there are.
Yeah, I have very little beef with the look of it. I actually kind of like the light bar across the front. I was skeptical seeing it in pictures initially, but then I saw it in person, and the light up badges are even kind of appealing to me. So it still looks really nice, and it's got this nice chunky design to it that I think will resonate with Americans. You know, that's one thing that they really want to emphasize with this, and that they also emphasize with the Tiguan and the Taos. And like, this thing is designed for America. This thing was designed in America. This isn't like some weird German thing that we're bringing over here, and maybe Americans will like it, maybe they won't. No, it's big, it's huge, and it should appeal to Americans who want this size of a car. They're just missing on a few of these finer details that, well, pretty much everybody else is hitting on. So,
how do we feel about the Subaru Crosstrek?
It's a Crosstrek.
Crosstrek.
That's about it, man. We've already kind of seen it for other markets, so
the one that
it
they
is
had,
what it is.
Yeah, the one that they had on the show floor there was this new sport trim that they had revealed, and it has all these like yellow accents on it. I remember, I'm pretty sure I was talking to you, Joel, about it, and it sort of looked like a wilderness trim, almost, with all of like the gold yellow accents. But it's not. It's a sport trim, but it very much has that outdoorsy, almost lifted crossover SUV type look to it. It looks considerably more SUV like than the previous Crosstrek did. I feel like the old Crosstrek was like, oh, this is just like a lifted Impreza. Like, barely lifted Impreza, that just kind of looks like a hatchback. This new one, I feel like they're going more towards like rough and tumble SUV look, which is probably a smart thing.
Yeah, and that sport model, especially with like the sport badges on the fenders that look very wildernessy, and like the kind of weather resistant fabrics and things inside, it has that vibe, and it's interesting. I couldn't pin down Subaru reps about whether there would be a Crosstrek wilderness, but what they did say when I said, like, is there going to be a wilderness, they were like, that's a very good idea, and that was all that they would say. And which, I mean, I kind of take that as it's probably going to happen, which I'm almost a little bit surprised at, just because the Crosstrek kind of is Impreza wilderness. So it'd be like Impreza wilderness.
But yeah,
it'd be interesting. I'm glad that they're still offering the 2.5 liter engine, because the regular 2 liter it's really, 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 really slow. And even more so now that they've dropped the manual, which is disappointing, but also entirely frankly, I'm surprised that they were still offering a manual on the previous generation.
Yeah, it was like one of the last, I mean, how many small crossover type things could you get with a manual? Just mm-hmm. this, maybe, at this point. So, rest in peace.
Yeah. But, right. You know, it's a Crosstrek, and it's almost the same size as the last one. It is neat that the 2.5 liter ones are going to be built in Indiana now.
That's true. Well, like you said, it's a Crosstrek. Jeep Wrangler 20th, paint and trim model with some extra stuff on there. What do you guys think? I think that's really the only thing we haven't hit on from the list, air quotes, of reveals. What do you guys think of that one?
I mean, it's pretty cool that the AEV version, the American Expedition Vehicles version, you can get with 37-inch tires from the factory.
That looks good, man.
It's pretty neat. And it's neat that you can get that even on the plug-in hybrid.
That's true.
Yeah. That is really neat. I think the headline for that one was, hey, like, you can get a Wrangler from the factory that costs over $100,000 now. Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. that's a new high watermark for that thing. I don't think even the 392 crested $100,000 before. But now you throw all these AEV things on it, and there it is, six figures on a Wrangler.
And you know that they're going to sell every single one of them.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. I mean, there are plenty of people that'll go out and buy a Wrangler for $65,000-$70,000 and then easily do it up with aftermarket stuff that crests over $100,000. So we see enough of those around already that Jeep's probably like, heck, why don't we just do this from the factory? And we'll take the profit from it instead of you having to sort it together with a bunch of aftermarket pieces.
Yeah, and I think Byron may have mentioned something about like having just one special edition with 37s is kind of a response to Bronco Raptor.
Yeah, I think that's a a measured response. Let me put it that way. One thing I will say about Jeep and specifically the Wrangler, whatever like models Ford can cook up with the Bronco, Jeep's like, oh, hey, cool. Yeah, we've had this one on the drawing board up in Auburn Hills. Get that off the shelf, people. We got to throw another one out. And I think they're very good at responding and, you know, playing to the base and generating good, like, off-roady Jeepy coverage. So, you know. All right. I think the other, like, sort of kernel of news out of the show was that Ram confirmed the name of their electric truck, and that was about it. Then they showed the Super Bowl spot shortly thereafter, which, if you read my column, I thought that was a hell of a good idea. I think more automakers should look to make news at the Chicago Auto Show and then maybe buy a Super Bowl spot. And it seems like you're making your money go a little farther. Let me put it that way. But I mean, I hesitate to even say, what do you guys think of the name, unless somebody's really against the, you know, the Rev 1500. But, you know, did they do anything special at the show? Here in Detroit, it just looked like they kicked out a press release, but I don't know if they did something better or what.
Well, basically, they just brought the concept from CES out on stage, and that was kind of the first time it was being shown at kind of a public auto show, and basically said that they were going to give the name at the Super Bowl, along with like the full reveal, which I feel like this has created kind of a weird situation where that pretty radical Ram electric truck concept is going to be on the show floor at Chicago for the next couple weeks. And the production one will not be on display.
Oh, that's
even
weird.
Though the production one has been revealed in the Super Bowl TV spots, and that production vehicle is quite a bit more mild than the concept. So I feel like it's going to be kind of a weird thing to have to juggle with, like, people come into the Chicago show and being like, oh, is that going to be the next Ram? Well, kind of.
It's going to share a front light signature.
Yeah.
And that's about
and
it.
Rear, and rear.
And rear. Okay. No, it's it is weird, like, how different it was, you know, from what I was expecting, the actual Ram Rev that was revealed at the Super Bowl. It's honestly looks like the same formula as like the F-150 Lightning. Just take your Ram 1500 that everybody loves, slap an electric looking front end and rear end on it, and call it a day.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't think that's necessarily a bad move.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, like,
absolutely.
And even more honest, I think I actually like the way the production one looks better than the concept.
The concept was weird. I didn't really like it when they revealed it at CES, and I didn't really like it when I saw it on the show floor. Just the crazy high belt lines on it made it look like it was going to be impossible to see out of if that was the direction they were going with the actual production truck. And the three row thing was a weird, novel idea. I feel like they're going to be fielding questions from people all week about that on the actual show. It's like, so is the production one going to have three rows? Well, no, it's not. It's just going to be like your normal Ram 1500. So yeah, I mean, considering the success that the Lightning has had so far, I completely agree with you guys. Good idea.
All right. Sounds good. So that, any final thoughts about the Chicago show? It looks like we hit on just about everything here. I guess it's, go ahead. Other thoughts?
I guess just continuing on Ram.
Yeah.
I think the Rev name is actually really good because
I do too.
It kind of connects with automotive themes, and also it literally can stand for Ram electric vehicle. So I think it works really well. I think it's still going to work out well. It is going to be interesting how they had this kind of radical concept and were promised and were talking up a lot of kind of wild novel features and going with kind of this conservative route. It will be very interesting to see how these two fare along with the Chevy Silverado EV, which actually is kind of a more radical design, since the Silverado is rocking just a single cab style and it's kind of a little bit more unibody-ish. and it's got the mid gate and things. It's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see how those approaches pan out.
Sounds good. Yeah, I think it's one thing I'll say about to backtrack just a little bit. I've always thought RAM kind of really goes for it in design, even going back like 15, 20 years. I know Ralph Gilles designed, you know, that generation of truck where some people thought it was a little more like cartoonish, but I always give them a lot of credit because they like, again, they go for it. You know, Ford and GM trucks tend to be more traditional looking. And, you know, for a while, the Ram was curvy, you know, and they were the first to like throw out some pretty like different takes on headlights even before companies used LEDs and things like that. So I kind of applaud them, you know, and every now and then they'll slip up into like number two in the pecking order as far as sales, like when they really have a truck that resonates. And, you know, we'll see. So Chicago Pizza, I got to ask it. I ask it every year. Did you have any? Do you like it? I don't know.
I had some right at the end of the show. I'm glad that I did. I actually don't know where it was from. Volkswagen had it at their stand. And I went and snagged a piece, and it was actually really good. And honestly, it was like it was a little thinner than what I'm used to from Chicago Pizza, which I kind of appreciated because it felt less like a casserole and more like I was just eating like a big thick slice of deep dish pizza.
Sounds good.
But yeah, no, it was excellent, and I'm glad I actually had some. And I know that in addition to the pizza though, we had Chicago hot dogs the first day, so two Chicago style foods this Chicago Auto Show.
What did you have on your Chicago dog?
Oh man, what the heck was there? There was like onion, tomato,
it's like a salad, right?
Relish. Yeah, it's almost like a salad type deal. Honestly, can't remember.
Just as long as you didn't put ketchup on it.
I did not put so I did one Chicago dog and then one just plain ketchup and mustard dog, and those are my two little different dogs that I had that day.
Okay, all right. How about you, Joel?
Honestly, I just had the dogs. I this is one time I went to Chicago and didn't have pizza.
Okay, random, but I will, since you asked. I did not have Chicago style pizza because I was in Michigan, although it's pretty easy to get around here too for a lot of reasons. I tend to like Giordano's when I'm in town, but I've had some, you know, generally good experiences there. I think Mazda used to do a party there, yep. Which was, I don't know, did they do that this year?
Sadly, no. There's been no Mazda pizza party in a while now.
That was a highlight of the show, man. I would give that best in show if I could. That was always fun.
Mazda is just like straight up pieced out with auto shows, and it's unfortunate. I would have really liked to have seen the CX-90 on the show.
This has been a good place for it, yeah.
No kidding. There would have been a perfect, honestly, with Grand Highlander and Atlas, they could have showcased the CX-90 and been like, look, our SUV is better than all these.
It would have probably won best in show in some ways. Plus, there's Lou Malnati's. I'll throw that in there too, which you can order online. I think that's a decent one. If you're looking for a pizza, you could pull out of your fridge. It's not bad. It's better than like Red Baron pizza. Let me put it that way. I don't know if it's worth the three times the cost. Let me put it that way also. The other big thing was the Super Bowl was basically, you know, 3 days later after press days. And if you're poking around Autoblog, check out my column. I think this is a really good thing for Chicago. It hasn't always been that way. Chicago hasn't really moved, give or take a few days. They've always been right around then. But the Super Bowl, you guys might remember this. It used to be in January. It keeps creeping. There's like the bye week in the NFL playoffs. And it's just like there's an extra regular season game. The Super Bowl is now in mid-February, you know. So this works out pretty well for the Chicago Auto Show. Now, obviously, they can't market it. You know, the NFL lawyers will get at them. But it's like literally you could do like what Ram did, you know, make some news, then do a Super Bowl spot. That's a lot of Ram news coming at a lot of people in a lot of different ways. So to me, it's a really good spot for a show that's always said they're consumer focused. So with that in mind, what Super Bowl ads did you guys like? Any of them?
I feel like the one that stood out the most to me was the GM Netflix combo.
Yeah.
That was honestly my favorite watch of the whole Super Bowl as far as the ads. Because I love the integration with the shows It was actually really funny. Will Ferrell was great in it. And there were so many cool EVs that they had on display. I will say that it sort of carried over my beef from, God, maybe it was like two Super Bowls ago that GM started doing ads for its EVs. And like, okay, most of the cars in these ads, we're not going to see for a long time on the roads. But that said, I thought that the ad was honestly really cool. And we got to see a lot of really neat stuff. And I mean, if you watched a lot of the big Netflix shows, like you would recognize it. Like the Squid Game one was really cool. Bridgerton, mm-hmm. Stranger Things, like just really, really cool tie-ins that definitely appeal to more than just car people watching the ad too.
I did think it was funny though that the appropriate situations for all these vehicles that they brought up all seem to be not good situations. Mm-hmm. It's either being kidnapped for a horribly dark game show or being in a zombie apocalypse. And it's like, I mean, they're nice cars, but like, do I really want to be in this situation?
Kind of like the Porsche Transformers one. We had this conversation a couple days ago in Slack. I saw it and my son saw it too. And he's like, this is cool. Wait, what is this? There's a Porsche. There's this Transformer thing. And then I went back to air frying some wings and totally forgot about it. So then like a day later, Zach was like, hey, did anybody cover this? And it had a 94 Porsche in it, which is cool. The new Transformers movie looks decent. I haven't really been into them in years, but you know, it was short to the point. Cool car. So I kind of like that one too.
Yeah, having the current RS 3.8 in it, mm-hmm. there's no getting around that as far as cool factor for any car commercial. So I haven't followed the Transformers movies at all, honestly.
Yeah,
maybe I should.
For me. I mean, maybe I cool should. Cars.
Yeah,
you know, I don't think they're going to win an Oscar. Let's put it that way. But I mean, some mental just ice cream, if you will. You know, way to eat some popcorn and have some fun for 2-3 hours or however long they are. And in case you're asking, my all-encompassing air fryer wing recipe is a homologation of a variety of sources, but it involves frying the wings, the drumette kind of things for about 20 minutes, give or take, and air frying, if you will, and then dropping them into a bowl, which I put a ton of Frank's hot sauce. The chicken wing like sauce, which they actually market separately, is pretty good, if you will. And then like an ungodly amount of butter, melted butter, which makes it kind of stick to the wings a little better and probably takes years off your life. It's not a bad recipe. It's not good for you.
Hey, the only way to do chicken wings is Frank's and butter. That is the way. Having gone to school in upstate New York, close enough to Buffalo.
Oh, right.
I'm sorry, that there is no other wing unless it is covered in Frank's. That is it.
It's a really good sauce, a really good flavor. The other ones to me are like gimmick wings. So
yep. I hear people put that stuff on everything.
They do?
Yeah.
They
do. Oh, I have plenty of friends that will put it on anything. Things you wouldn't even suspect make sense.
It's the most universal hot sauce. Tabasco is too hot for some situations, although I do like it. And the other ones can get a little, like, you can get any kind of hot sauce you want. So, yeah. All right, so let's get into our drives segment. You guys both got there different ways. Zach, you flew. Joel, you drove. So you might as well talk about our long-term Toyota Sienna to kick things off. And then, Zach, you can tell me what your flying experience was like, if you prefer to drive or fly to Chicago. But the floor is yours, Joel. What's this new Sienna like?
Well, so to get all the details, you should check out our long-term intro post. But it's a Toyota Sienna Platinum all-wheel drive.
Okay.
And it's pretty decked out. And I like parts of it, and there are some parts that I'm less enthused about. The fuel economy, of course, is really nice. I've put a little more than 1,000 miles on it already since I drove out to Chicago, and then I drove down to my parents, and then I drove back up to Detroit. So hundreds of miles. And on highway driving, I've been getting consistently like between 32 and 36 miles per gallon, like depending on the situation, specifically for highway driving. And I mean, that's really, really good for a minivan. It's about the best that you can get in a minivan. And when cruising along, it's really quiet and it's really comfortable. I'm very impressed with the suspension tuning on it. It's soft, but it's really well controlled. So it's not like rocking back and forth or kind of floating along. It just absorbs the bump and moves on with its life. What I'm not as enthused about is, like a whole lot of Toyotas I've driven lately, the four-cylinder is just really noisy and really rough. And it's exacerbated by the fact that it's not hugely powerful, and it uses a CVT. So anytime that you really need some acceleration, it's just groaning and moaning and is generally unhappy with life. And that gets really tiresome, especially kind of here in Metro Detroit, where a lot of the speed limits around me are like 40, 50 miles an hour. And so when you got to get up to speed fairly quickly from a standstill, and it's just really unhappy. Obviously, that's not a big issue when you're just soaking up highway miles and you're just at cruising speed. So it has been fantastic for that. And like I said in my update, it's hard to be too mad at it when it is returning such great fuel economy, but it's something to consider if you're looking at minivans. I would really like to see Toyota put more work into making their engines a little smoother and more refined, or just like cramming a whole bunch of insulation under the hood and against the firewall just so that it doesn't sound so strained.
Okay. So mostly you enjoyed your trip. It sounds like it was efficient. How did you have to fill up even? I'm not sure what the range is on that thing.
Yeah, I had to fill up. I've only filled this thing up twice. Like the range is around kind of the 500 mile mark.
Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Really good range, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah, and like the fuel tank isn't crazy huge. I think I was seeing like around 15 gallons when I was filling up, so it's not painful. It could be better, but also like it could be way worse. So not horribly painful to fill up either. And it just takes 87 octane. It's not like a lot of turbo engines nowadays that require premium. So, I mean, for all that, it's nice. Plus, I mean, it's all-wheel drive too, which is great.
That's impressive for an all-wheel drive vehicle that is not small. Let's put it that way. You know, that's very usable for families. I'm planning to take it to Florida in about a month. So that may be only one fill-up, you know, maybe somewhere around Cincinnati, Nashville, and then fill up in Florida. We'll see. Cool. So that's the Toyota Sienna. A lot more on that to come. We're just getting our first taste on it. I'm excited that you were able to take it to Chicago and get into it like that this, you know, early in the loan. Yeah. Would you have rather done that or flown, Zach? I guess this is a segment I threw on there that sounded like a good idea. I don't know.
Yeah. This was the first time that I've ever actually flown to Chicago for the show. I normally do drive, just like Joel. Yeah. And I think that I'm going to drive from now on. I almost missed my flight coming back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was cool. No, they, we left the hotel at like a reasonable time with like just over 2 hours until the flight. But then the drive that took 20 minutes from the airport into Chicago took over an hour from the hotel to the airport going back. And then security was just absolutely insane. And honestly, like considering all the time that we spent like leaving ahead of time and flying and then driving home, like it was almost around the 4 hour mark. And to drive from Metro Detroit to Chicago is like just under 5 hours. So it really doesn't make much sense to fly to me. I don't think it's a much better trip to do driving. Even if it is a relatively cheap flight, I just think that the drive is a lot better and relaxing. You can do it on your own time as opposed to having to worry about missing flights, Chicago traffic, getting to an airport at rush hour. And Definitely driving now. That's a takeaway.
It is nice to pull out of your hotel, like maybe after having a nice like room service breakfast, and then you're just home in like 4 to 5 hours, as opposed to going to the airport and going through that stress. The only downside is if like, say it's like a late February winter night, and it's like, well, do I really want to drive across the plains of Indiana and the west side of the state to get home? And it's like snowing. In that case, it can be nice to like let them fly you home, and then you live close to the airport. It's a little bit easier, but yeah, I think it's drive it if you can.
Yeah, I think that Joel's experience was a lot better than mine.
Yeah, all of that is kind of the calculus that I've made every Chicago trip. That it's like, I can leave when I want to, both going there and coming back. I have a more comfortable and more spacious seat for the entire time. I don't have to deal with other people. I can stop and get food anytime that I want along the way. It's just, and there are other things about the drive too that I just kind of enjoy, that I'm planning on writing a little something for an opinion piece coming up. So stay tuned for that. Don't want to give it all away, but yeah, I've just, and the time is kind of the same. And then once I'm there, like I can just pull right into the parking garage there. I'm set up with parking, and I've got a car if I want to go someplace else in Chicago, like to go get dinner or something. And then I can kind of change my plans as needed. Like I was able to just drive straight down to my parents instead of having to take a plane to Detroit, get my car, and then drive down. So yeah, it just, yeah, it works out best for me to just drive.
All right. Sounds good. So right before the Chicago show, days before, Zach passed the EV6 keys to me, the fob, such as it is. But you drove it for a lot more than I have. I've only had it for about a week at this point. Really enjoying it, by the way. I think I'm going to charge it up today or tomorrow. I found a fast charger, such as it is, somewhat near me. But what did you think of it, Zach? You had it for almost a month, right? Ins and outs, charging experience.
So I had this thing during the summer, and you know, the whole charging experience was really great. The one difference that I had for this past month is that I got it at the start of January, and I handed it off at the start of February. And we all know that lithium ion batteries tend to not like cold weather. Similar case with this EV6. I can definitely say that it was a lot more enjoyable to live with it during the summer, especially because I'm somebody that doesn't have like a home charger, don't have like a level 2 box. So I'm pretty reliant on public charging if I want to go anywhere, or if I'm just doing my normal driving throughout the week and eventually need more charge. So I want to say I had to charge it about 4 or 5 times throughout my month with it. And every single time, you know, is around 30 degrees or so. So you plug in, and unfortunately, you know, that super cold weather is going to limit the charge speed. So those 235, 240 kilowatt charge speeds I was seeing in the summer, never got anywhere close to that in the winter. If I was lucky, I got up to about 120 kilowatts, which isn't so bad, honestly. That is relatively quick, but there were multiple experiences at Electrify Americas and EVgos where the thing would max out at around 80 or 90 kilowatts. I know that I told you right before I dropped it off, like the night before, I spent about an hour to an hour and a half at an Electrify America, just trying to charge a thing, which isn't exactly the way that one might want to spend their Monday night after work or whatever. But, you know, so that part was a little rough, of course. I mean, all of the good things that I liked about it driving over the summer remain. Driving over the winter, still super quick, very comfy. I love the utility of it. The design is not, it's just continuing to grow on me. I like it a lot. Overall, like, still really, really digging the thing. I would really love to have a level 2 charger at home to leave my house every day with a full charge. I think that would probably cure pretty much all of my issues with it. Because I didn't do any winter road trips. That would be its own set of problems. But
I'm debating if I'm going to actually take it on a winter road trip. I've looked at the infrastructure. I think it's definitely doable. I mean, of course it's doable, but a little nervous about how long I might want to wait, you know, at a charger, you know, with like the family, you know. If it's like quick charge under a half an hour to get usable range, all good. You know, essentially that is a little bit longer than a gas station. But I mean, you know, at a gas station, you get out, you go to the bathroom, you get some coffee, you're there for 20 minutes most of the time anyway, if you really time yourself. So I'm still debating it.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you're doing a road trip, so you stop with around 10% charge or 20% charge, I would budget about an hour to charge. Ugh. And that's about what it is to get back up to a, like an 80, 85% charge. So take of that what you will.
You're persuading me against it. Maybe that'll be my long-term update, is I didn't drive the car because I didn't want to spend an hour at like a Meijer in random mid-Michigan, you know, up north place, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's a bummer that I feel like there still aren't a whole lot of fast chargers that are in particularly close proximity to like restaurants. Mm-hmm. I know that around Metro Detroit, a lot have popped up at like Meijer and other department stores and stuff, which it's not bad, but I feel like the very obvious combination would be like to set up a charger somewhere that you could stop and everybody can get out of the car, go sit down and eat, and then come out and resume the journey. Because I can't imagine... I'm fine with sitting in a car for like half an hour to an hour, just kind of chilling. But I could see how, if you've got a family, the rest of the family may not be so into that idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I have enjoyed driving it though. You know, since you dropped it off, Zach, it was immaculate, by the way. I have to thank you publicly for that. It was cleaner than from the fleets even, and they do a great job too. But it's, you know, again, it's a very attractive car. You know, ours is very nicely equipped. It's a lot of fun to drive. So I'm looking forward to driving it more. We'll see how far north it gets, though. Let's put it that way. But speaking of electric cars, Genesis G80 Electric, you have been driving that. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So I drove that last week, and I was honestly very impressed with this thing. I liked the regular G80, but I don't think that I loved it. The one that I drove was the Sport Prestige with the twin turbo V6, and it sort of, I don't know, just didn't really feel like it cemented in anywhere great for me. It was fine in pretty much every respect, but not a top of class thing. This, on the other hand, this really, really impressed me in how fun it was to drive. It's honestly pretty similar acceleration as like the EV6, so 0 to 60 and mid fours or so. So quick enough, but the handling was just way better than I was expecting for a mid-size sedan. The battery pack being along the floor gives it that super low center of gravity. This thing felt positively agile when I was out having fun with it. So in that respect, yeah, really, really great electric sedan. And I'm sad that they only sell it in like 6 or 7 states, because not everybody can have this thing. But, you know, all of the good things about the G80 and like the gas version stick around, like the interior, super luxurious interior. I love the look in there, the Genesis infotainment, all of the materials that they use. Mine had this sort of tan and brown combo going on. Was extremely classy. I want to say my one beef with it is it honestly didn't ride as well as I was expecting it to ride. I'm guessing that it has something to do with the fact that it's a lot heavier than the normal G80, so they've had to compensate with perhaps some stiffer springs handle that weight, but it's not quite the pillowy cruiser that the gasoline G80 was. But outside of that, I went and charged this thing during the week. Same issue that the EV6 had, but this thing actually does have a preconditioning system, and I used it. It really didn't seem to do much as far as upping the charge speed, so I was still subject to the slow, cold winter charging. But Yeah, no, a lot of positive impressions from the G80 Electrified. I cannot wait to write the review because this was a really good one.
Something that I've been slightly let down by, like, I like our EV6, but I was kind of hoping that it would sort of be an electric Kia Stinger, and I don't think it really is that. It's a little bit too soft, the steering's a little bit too numb. Knowing that the Electrified G80 is actually a very similar chassis to the Stinger, I was curious, is the Electrified G80 closer to that electric Stinger that I kind of wish existed?
Definitely, yes. Definitely. It is way more fun to drive than the EV6 or the Ioniq 5R. That's saying a lot too, because like the EV6 and Ioniq 5 are fun to drive vehicles. But the G80 was just fun in every respect, in that it really handles like a car, and you feel low to the ground, and it doesn't have that sort of tallish feeling that you get from the EV6 or Ioniq 5. So yeah, really, really good there. It is certainly expensive. The thing is over $80,000. So in that way, no, it's not like an electric Stinger. Because you get like a Stinger GT for like mid-50s. But this being a luxury car, of course, you're going to get a much more expensive final price. But driving it, yeah, man, this thing is awesome. It'll do four-wheel peel-outs when you turn traction control off. The rear end wags around a good bit. And it's really, really well sorted on the road. So they've done well there.
Sounds good. Genesis is... has a lot of momentum right now. This was another one of the many Genesis vehicles that were on the NACTOY list for car of the year, if you will. One of the hangups for me as far as giving it points was the fact that it's only available in 8 states, or at least it was last fall. So, it's tricky, but a little insight into my voting ideas, let's put it that way. Should we spend some money?
Let's do it.
I think we should. All right. So this is from Justin. So this isn't exactly a spend my money because he's already made the purchase. I recently got a 2023 Audi A5 S-Line Prestige. Just wondering what you guys think of it. Previously had a 2021 Acura TLX A-Spec. He did love the Acura. What do you guys think of the 2023 Audi A5 S-Line Prestige? So, Joel, what do you think?
I mean, I like the A5. I think it looks great. And I felt like they've always driven nicely. And I like Audi interiors. Yeah, it's a good little car.
Zach, do you agree?
I like the A5 too. I feel like if you wanted something that is a good bit faster than the TLX, you got it. It's certainly quicker in a straight line. I like the handling of the Acura a little bit better. But that said, like that Audi still handles really, really well. The latest A4s and A5s are a lot of fun to drive. So yeah, I mean, the Audi's probably a little more expensive than your Acura, but you're getting a little bit more car too. So
yeah,
boom.
Sounds good. All right, I concur. I mean, to me, it's like seems like you're in a pretty good spot there, Justin, where you can try drive an Acura, then upgrade in some ways to an Audi. It's a good move. I think it's a good car. So if you think the Auto Blog podcast is a good podcast, please leave us 5 stars on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get the show. Send us your spend my monies. That's podcast@autoblog.com. Let us know what kind of pizza you like. Where does the Chicago style rank? Get into the comments. Let us know. Drop us an email. Be safe out there. We'll see you next week.